Hello and welcome to another episode of Jumpcast. We are back as a full group again. God, 2 weeks in a row. Let's not jinx it, eh? My name is Simon Whitlock. Joining me, as ever, are my lovely co-hosts, Alex Gilston.
Hello.
And Charlotte Harrison.
Ahoy.
And together we will be discussing the latest news, a week old news, trailers and reviews of what would have been the hottest releases, Nope, Day Shift, Where Is Anne Frank, and Lal Singh Cheddar. We also have a fun game promised by Alex later on, which I'm very excited about.
You know it's not going to be fun.
Oh no, I'm really excited. My anticipation is through the roof.
Oh god.
I can hear it in your tone.
Welcome to mid-August. Oh god. But no, I love the summer. It's great. So, well, we should probably get cracking on with bits and pieces. But how are we, guys? Have we been keeping well? Been up to much fun? Seen anything good? Charlotte, how about yourself?
So I've not really mentioned it much, but I'm on my summer holidays right now.
Oh.
So,
I never would have guessed.
Nearly daily, and I eat a lot. No, it's been really nice. It's also made me realise how bad things got in July. A bit like waking up from a coma or finishing a war zone, I imagine. A bit like that. So I'm just currently healing.
But I'm just getting like the vibes of Robin Williams and Jumanji, like what year is it kind of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I forget what day it is or date it is. In a nice way. I have watched some good things though. I watched all four episodes of Marriage on BBC, starring Sean Bean and Nicola Walker. And it's brilliant, but it's also sort of awful in how painful it is.
Oh gosh.
Because it's really realistic. It's the most sort of European drama set in a London suburb I've ever seen. In terms of, it's really not afraid of showing how boring marriage is and how awkward life can be and relationships and how we're all like, we intercut each other's paths. We don't always know what's going on. It's very, very good. I will never watch it again. And the other thing, which is a league of their own on Amazon. Have either of you seen any of it yet?
I've watched an episode and I'm loving it so far. I think it's brilliant.
I burnt through it Friday, Saturday.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. I say, my experience of it has been purely through the articles made about the one-star reviews on Amazon.
Oh, yeah. Like the ones about Sandman.
Yeah. But yes, I'm assuming
how dare
very much
you?
The...
It's all just boring and woke and gay.
How dare I watch a... thing about women's baseball for the relationships between the women. My God.
How do they speak about anything apart from men? That's what you should speak about. Forget the Bechdel test. Yeah. It's wonderful. It's really, really good.
I need to get on that. I really do. I've heard such good things. Especially from you, Charlotte. So now that's sealed it. I need to watch it now. Alex, what about you? What have you been up to?
Nothing.
That's a very accusatory tone. I'm so sorry. What have you been up to, Alex?
Nothing.
Oh, still the same. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. No, nothing really. I've kind of been trying to chill out with the hot weather. It's just been like just difficult to even think about doing anything. But I feel like I'm glad that Charlotte, you mentioned A League of Their Own, because I was like, I've got so many things to mention that I'm like two or three episodes into, but I'm really enjoying. So bear with me as I try and remember all of these things. So A League of Their Own, again, I've only watched one episode of that, but I think it's great. I think it's very strange to see Abby Jacobson in a live action role and not as a cartoon, but I think she's brilliant. And Darcy Carden, of course.
Oh, was she in it?
Yes. Yeah, of course, she was brilliant as Janet in The Good Place forever. Wonderful. I've been trying to keep up with all the drag races, which is just becoming ever more impossible. But Drag Race Canada...
unappealing.
Yeah, kind of. But Drag Race Canada is okay. Secret Celebrity Drag Race, don't even bother.
No, really? No.
It's not even that. It's just not all, just, all
and Down
at
Under.
All.
I'm giving up on Down Under.
Yeah. Yeah. That it's not great, is it? Anyway.
Oh, what a shame.
I am on episode 7 of The Sandman. I'm getting through that. I'm kind of in the state of, I don't want it to finish. Like, I'm really, really enjoying it. I think it's so brilliant. And I love how, like, serialized it is. Like, how every episode is kind of its own thing. But it's got the overarching story. I really like the way that it's all framed, and everybody in it is absolutely brilliant, and it's just wonderful. I feel like Neil Gaiman's brain is just an impeccable thing, and I feel like scientists should experiment on it for years after his death. not that should be soon. Sorry.
Wow.
He also has written one of the best episodes of Doctor Who. Sorry, I am rambling now. Finally,
closing time.
No, wait, he did write that one. I meant The Doctor's Wife, but...
Okay. Wait. Wow, we got a James Corden fan over here.
And then finally, the third series of Never Have I Ever has started on Netflix, or is out, all out. And I genuinely think it's one of the best sitcoms that Netflix has ever made. Yeah. All thanks to Mindy Kaling. So, yeah.
Let's say, just want to be, because I know there are going to be angry Whovians on us. He didn't write Closing Time. I think he wrote Nightmare and Silver from that same series.
He did, yeah.
Which still, okay.
Yeah, no, that wasn't great. I do still believe that The Doctor's Wife is a very good
episode. Oh yeah, Doctor's Wife is great. But yeah. And it wasn't for the writing that wasn't much good. But there you go. But yes. Cool. No, that's really nice though. That's good. I'm glad you're enjoying things. As for me, I've also started The Sandman because it's just the most talked about thing on Netflix for once, justifiably. I'm really enjoying it. I'm not as far in as you are, Alex. I'm probably about 3 or 4 episodes in. And yeah, I'm enjoying it. I think I've still got to wait for it to click into, I must watch another episode.
Oh, episode 5's the kicker.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, that's where I'm stuck at the moment, is I know the things that are going to have to happen in terms of the plot. Like, I've not read the graphic novel or anything like that, so I'm going into this relatively blind. But it's like, oh, cool. I know the things that they're like, we've got to go here to get this, we've got to go there to get that. I'm like, okay, looking forward to that. But at the moment, I'm not like, I must find out where that goes. But yeah, I'll report back. But what I've been doing mostly is reading this last week.
Ooh.
I know. I've become one of those people. It's like, I don't even watch TV. but no, I've been catching up on a backlog of stuff. And most recently, Girl, Woman, Other, the novel from Bernardine Evaristo. What a book. One of the best things I've read in years. And a rightful winner of all the accolades, including the Booker Prize. So yeah, loved it. But I guess I should get back into screen stuff. And well, speaking of which, so should we, as we venture into the news. Now, we start with something that did the rounds on time of recording on social media yesterday. So Warner Brothers, in its new vision for the future in terms of its cinematic slate, has enlisted Kenya Barris of Blackish fame to take on a retelling of The Wizard of Oz, here now called Wizard of Oz. They dropped the. So, we'll go very quickly around. Are we excited for a new version of The Wizard of Oz? Did Oz the Great and Powerful or Wicked Part 1 and Part 2 not satisfy those cravings for you guys, Alex?
I feel like, is there not a little bit of a conflict of interest with this? Considering that they are currently in production on Wicked.
Oh yeah, I mean, can you have too much Oz, really?
Well, potentially. Although what I will say is that although I have never watched Blackish like from the beginning and binged it all the way through, it is on E4 quite often, and I generally have E4 on as like my channel of choice. And whenever I've kind of like been not doing anything, and then I kind of gravitate my eyes towards the television, and I've actually watched Blackish. It is very good.
Well, that is a review.
That's the poster quote, isn't it, really?
That's the
I feel like I need to start I need to do it justice and actually watch it properly.
No, I think, yeah, I just saw some bits that were on E4 and it was alright. Is what they were going for.
What I'm trying to say is that I feel God's sakes. This is it now, I'm gonna get cancelled.
Oh, I'm being silenced. Alex Gilston in The Independent.
But yes, I'm sorry. I would say I'm not excited for it, but I feel like the name attached gives me reason for positive thoughts.
Nice. Well, good. Charlotte, how about yourself? Are you looking forward to more excursions to Oz?
No, not really. I had to look up Oz the Great and the Powerful with James Franco, right?
Yes.
I remember that visually being, apart from James Franco, visually quite appealing. I didn't hate it, I remember.
Sam Raimi for you.
Yeah. But this just feels pointless, isn't it? Again, my catchphrase, just make something new.
Yeah, yeah.
And not dropping a letter of the title, you know.
Warner Bros. Seem to have an interesting relationship with the word the, don't they?
So, yeah, either it's The Batman.
The Suicide Squad.
The Suicide Squad, or just Wizard of Oz.
The hierarchy in the DC Universe.
Oh, man. That was very well done, Alex. You should be proud of yourself.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on. So, you may be familiar with some of the bits and pieces we've been talking about with regards to the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. Is it the ballad or a ballad?
I think it might be the
I think it's
we're
the
showing
ballad.
Ourselves as fools
the
now.
Ballad.
Let's go the with ballad. Yeah, the, thank you. So, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, the prequel to The Hunger Games,
yes,
has found its protagonist in the Viola Davis.
Protagonist?
Antagonist. Look, okay, we've been doing this for over a year now. I'm allowed to make a mistake. The mistake.
The mistake, yeah.
So, yes, Viola Davis is going to be a no good baddie in The Hunger Games, the prequel. I'm excited. I'm just going to put it out there. Charlotte, you excited?
No.
Cool. Alex, you excited?
I mean, I'm excited for Viola Davis in absolutely anything and everything. I will walk to the ends of the earth for that woman. So, yes.
Nice. Let's see. We've started like doing bits and pieces of marketing stuff for it, pictures coming out, whatnot. I mean, it's a Hunger Games film. You've made up your mind already, I'm sure.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Another thing you'll have already made up your mind as to whether or not you're excited is David Leitch's The Fall Guy off the back of the rousing success of Bullet Train.
Which some people liked more than others, and we will support everyone's differing opinions.
Exactly, yeah, no, it's a melting pot of ideas. The marketplace of ideas, sorry.
Not to go off on a tangent, but Charlotte, I very much enjoyed Bullet Train. Sorry, Simon.
Yes!
That's fine. That's great, because that's me up at the... What's the world? Against the world now. So, great, I've got a cause.
All right, Mr. Incel, God.
Charlotte, we said we keep the personal nicknames off the show.
You're actually a David Leitch cell.
Take a second. Cool, so David Leitch off the back of, yes, off of Bullet Train, which is liked by the majority of people, it sounds like. Good for them. Is going to be next making the remake of the 80s classic, he says with a bit of a skeptical eye, The Fall Guy. We knew that Ryan Gosling was on board, but it turns out that Emily Blunt is joining him for this. So I'll come to the David Leitch fans, the fanboys, the lovers. Alex, you excited to see some Emily Blunt in a David Leitch joint?
Yeah.
Cool.
I think so.
You think so? Wow. Good. Charlotte, what about you? Are you excited to see where David Leitch goes next after stepping off the bullet train?
Right, Ozstyle, we're going to go behind the curtain here. On our spreadsheet, we've got these five news articles that we're going to talk about.
Uh-huh.
All of these are remakes or pre-sold.
That is like a very good point.
And it's just depressing me looking at this list.
Yeah.
So no, I'm not excited about this. I like Emily Blunt a lot. I really like Edge of Tomorrow.
Yep.
But I looked this up and I'm not interested in this either.
Well, it only gets better, Charlotte, because the next film we're going to be talking about is Kung Fu Panda 4.
Hell yeah.
Well, okay, we've got one person invested. So, look, I'm going to level with you guys. I've not seen Kung Fu Panda 3. I don't know if this is an unnecessary continuation. Yeah.
I feel like there is always an argument to be made about a fourth outing being a unnecessary.
Well, except for Toy Story 4, because that was lovely.
This is what I was going to say, Simon.
Sorry.
Toy Story 4 is anything to go by, then maybe Kung Fu Panda 4 will be an outlier. It will bring every narrative Kung Fu Panda thread together and bring us a satisfying closure to all of the characters' stories.
There was a cinema I used to work at, a multiplex, and when Kung Fu Panda 3 was showing in one of the auditoriums, at the back, some people were trying to get off with one another. We had to kick them out.
Kung Fu Panda.
Like, it got to the point where it was like, we could probably involve the police in this because there were children around. Like, it was really just disgusting.
Yeah, that is very strange.
And that's as close as I have to an encounter with Kung Fu Panda 3.
That come out like the same year as 50 Shades? Like, they could have chosen that instead.
Look, I don't know what was going through their heads, but
that was like Valentine's Day. So.
Jesus Christ.
I don't think Kung Fu Panda came out around Valentine's Day.
So, you guys have never seen Kung Fu Panda 3. I thought you were going
to say Kung Fu Panda's the hot Valentine's thing.
There is a scene.
It came out March.
Sorry.
Wow. There is a scene March, in Kung Fu Panda 3 with a character, a panda called Mei Mei, that is voiced by Kate Hudson. It is by far one of the greatest scenes in any Kung Fu Panda movie. Like, you could just watch the scene out of context and it'd be hilarious.
Okay. Challenge accepted.
I might challenge you to that later on.
Okay. Is this like... I'm worried now, Alex.
It's very good.
Is it actually really good? Or
no, it's probably... You'll both watch it and you'll be like, Alex, what are you talking about? Come on.
Is this over the hedge again?
No, not over the hedge.
Anyway, animated franchise staples are getting a fourth outing that isn't Toy Story 4, and I'm here for it. Give me Despicable Me 4. Give me Kung Fu Panda 4. I'm here.
Despicable Me 4 is happening, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hasn't it sort of happened with the Minions films as well? Like, if you had them together, there's been five.
Yeah.
No, but like actual Despicable Me 4.
Basically, they went to Steve Carell with like two really big bags of money after Despicable Me 3, and he's like, okay, fine.
I'll do the silly voice once more. Well, actually, I'll do it twice more, once as a baby.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, Kung Fu Panda 4. If you're looking forward to that, the reason it's up here is because it's been announced as coming out in 2024. So if you can't hold off till then, I don't know what to tell you. Maybe go outside. Maybe see a nice tree. Maybe go meet like-minded people.
Yeah, okay,
start a friendship.
Move on, Simon. Go on.
Oh, yeah, God, I said,
what a way to trigger existential crisis, right?
Disclaimer, if you like Kung Fu Panda, it's fine. You don't need to apologise for that.
Oh, no, liking it is fine, but, you know, I'm just saying if you're, like...
Even if you're excited for Kung Fu Panda 4, be excited. Don't let Simon tell you any different.
Look, I'm just saying, be excited, but don't get so excited for it where you're like, bring it to us now kind of thing.
Okay, I'll leave.
Just say...
Carry on!
Okay, well, Charlotte, hi. Hi. No, okay, so, it's just us. Turns out Alex is gone. No. Okay, so let's move on to the last bit of news before we move on. And once again, like you said, Charlotte, it is something which is based on something that's already out there and has been doing the mill for the best part of 5 years, from what I can understand it. So, The Electric State, this is going to be the next project from the Russo brothers for Netflix. It has been basically shipped from Universal to here, there, and everywhere, and now it's at Netflix. And we are being told that alongside Millie Bobby Brown, who has been apparently on board in the lead role of the film since the rights were bought in 2017, we now also have more casts announced, including Stanley Tucci and Michelle Yeoh and Brian Cox in a voice role. I mean, muster whatever excitement you have, Charlotte, and let the world know how you feel about what is coming out from the Russo brothers production company next.
So I've just been on Stanley Tucci's IMDb because I was trying to get excited about this film. I was like, I'll go the Stanley, go the Tucci route.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know he's doing a Whitney Houston biopic?
That's he's a not playing bold Whitney, casting.
Just thank you. Oh. He's playing the record producer. Is it Naomi Aki?
Yes, yeah.
Playing Whitney.
Oh, she playing Whitney? Wow, okay.
Ashton Sanders is Bobby Brown. Clark Peters is John Huston, supposed to be her father. Anyway, so that film sounds interesting.
That does sound interesting. Anything else that Stanley Tucci's coming up in?
Oh yeah, Inside Man on BBC. I'm going to that preview screening in September. That looks good.
Oh, nice.
Also, if you miss Stanley Tucci in Supernova, you should really rectify that. Yeah,
Stanley Tucci was great in Supernova. Oh my gosh, what a film.
Yeah. He's in an animated TV series called Moly, about a mole.
Oh.
Hang on, look, Gemma Arterton's in this as well. As Mona Lisa. Yeah. And Stanley Tucci's Uncle Mishmosh.
Uncle Mishmosh. Man.
Charles Dance in an episode, Julie Waters, Harrison Davis and Warwick Davis, Richard E. Grant. I'm just going to go down this rabbit hole. I don't care about Electric Lake. Yeah.
I'd say the one I'm excited for is Robert Harris's Conclave being adapted. So Stanley Tucci is going to be in that as one of the Cardinals alongside Ralph Fiennes and John Lithgow. Mm-hmm. And it's got Isabella Rossellini in there as well. That does sound very interesting. When's that coming out?
That sounds good.
It says it's filming. Well, okay. This has become the Tucci update. What's Citadel? Ooh.
That's
plot
good.
Kept under wraps. Wow, colour me intrigued. That's got a big old cast, though.
Mm.
Mm. Well, there you go. What were we talking about again? Oh, yeah, the people who did The Grey Man. That's fair enough. Cool. So, yeah, that was the news. Make of that what you will. Anyway, let's move on to the next bit of the show, which normally comes after the first bit, which is the trailer talk. Guys, the energy is there, I swear. I'm just very... It's been a long month. Okay, so we start with a more in-depth look at The Menu. So we looked at this very briefly and a small teaser before. Now there's more of it. Basically, there wasn't much of it. Now there's more of it. What do we think of the more of it, Alex?
I honestly, I hadn't seen anything about it. I hadn't seen anything about the plot. Just knew that it was Ralph Fiennes and Anya Taylor-Joy. And I honestly thought that this was like some kind of like just the end of Ratatouille, but the whole film.
Okay, yeah.
But realistically, it's actually what if Heston Blumenthal was a psychopath?
Yeah.
actually, Heston Blumenthal could potentially be a psychopath, but yeah, you know, it's a like an experience for the sensory and the taste, and like we're gonna give you an orange that actually tastes like duck, and then we're gonna go and chase you through the woods with guns. But you will be the duck.
How many Michelin stars do you think that chef would get for that?
10 probably. No, it looks good. I'm very excited for this.
Nice. Charlotte, are you very excited for this?
Like, in a way, yeah. Although, right, it describes in the blurb about a young couple go for a meal, and along with a shocking surprise, right? Everything in the trailer points towards cannibalism, doesn't it? No?
See, I was thinking it points more towards, like...
I was thinking, like, kind of...
Anti-capitalist, kind of like, this is your last meal, capitalist pig dogs, kind of
really?
Thing.
Really? I was thinking, like... Yeah, maybe that. Like, as in, like, a grand meal, but actually it's Saw.
Okay. So kind of like Boiling Point meets The Most Dangerous Game.
Yeah. Actually, that's quite...
I've watched that, you know?
All in one take, they really died.
Adam McKay is the producer on this.
Yeah.
Look, yeah. He was also the producer on Fresh, and that ended up being quite good. So
yeah, I mean, he's a producer.
Mm. Oh, yeah, true.
Maybe you're right, Charlotte.
Yeah. God, One Note McKay back again.
Bumming. He is also a producer on Succession, so I'll let him off.
He is. That is true.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, he's got an eye for it. Doesn't necessarily have the craft for it. Let's just say that. Cool. Right. So the next trailer on the list is for the new Lena Dunham film. Yep. Starring lots of people, including her off of Game of Thrones, and him off of being Russell Brand and other people. It's Catherine Called Birdie. This looks, well, it certainly looks. Charlotte, what were your thoughts after watching this trailer?
I wasn't surprised it's going straight to streamer as I was watching the trailer. Not in a malicious way. Just I couldn't work out who the film was for, necessarily. Like, it's got quite a niche audience. There's parts of the trailer I really did like, and I do enjoy Bella Ramsey.
Yes, the main Bella character, Ramsey, that's Birdie. What I think of. Yeah.
And Joe Alwyn is always an intriguing presence, and more Billy Piper. Cannot complain about more Billy Piper. I don't know how the film's going to play out, but I will watch it.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment, I'd say. Alex... Catherine Called Birdie.
Yeah, I mean, it had everything. It had Bella Ramsey in the main role. It had Andrew Scott, Billy Piper, period vibes. And then up popped, screenplay and directed by Lena Dunham. and that told me everything I need to know. A film that looks really, really good on the surface, but will ultimately end up being incredibly problematic and rubbish. So,
yeah. Well, it's good we're getting the optimism out early. So, next up.
It's been a very joyous episode.
It's just so full of... It's effervescent, I'd say. I mean, we've never been halfway through this part of the podcast this early. So, if nothing else... If nothing else, we're prompt.
Pessimism makes you productive.
Hang on a minute, I'm writing that down. I'm getting that laminated and putting up on the wall.
You should be bothered, but you shouldn't have to feel bothered.
The audience doesn't need to know that you're enthusiastic and excited for all of it. Just, I mean, it's, you know, worked on YouTube
Cinema.
Long enough. Cinema sins. Cool. So, where were we? Oh, yes. End of the Road. So, this is Queen Latifah and Ludacris on a road trip gone wrong. Looks interesting. I was expecting more japes from the premise, but it certainly seems to be taking a turn. In the Road, get it? Charlotte, from what you've seen of End of the Road, what do you think?
You know, I said the last one, I wasn't surprised it was straight to Amazon Prime. This one, I'm not surprised it's straight to Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. It looks all right. And in fact, we're going to be talking about a Netflix film later, which was surprisingly, for me anyway, before I, you know, preface anything, not god-awful. So, yeah. But yeah, I do know what you mean. It's that, like, it's Friday night, you've had a couple of beers, what do you do? Oh, got End of the Road? Yeah, all right. But Alex might have a different opinion. Alex?
No, I'm pretty much on that wavelength.
Wonderful. See, it's times like this where it's just like, yeah, this is why it feels so prompt, because, you know, we're just wavelength guys. Another one which looks like a film is the new trailer for A24's latest marketing opportunity, God's Creatures. So Alex, from this trailer and this trailer alone, nothing else, no outside information, are you excited for this film?
I can't really grasp what was going on. I was a bit distracted by Paul Mescal's face, if I'm honest.
So are you one of part of his cult?
No, in a not good way.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It just took me out of it.
Interesting. Because, funnily enough, Alex, before recording, you disappeared for a second. And Charlotte and I mentioned that there's something about Paul Mescal which is not doing it.
Yeah. Just a meme.
Yeah.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah. And I even watched Normal People.
Look, I get it with Connell, specifically that character. But Paul Mescal, I don't know. But, you know, again, fascinated. I am intrigued. Charlotte, are you fascinated? Are you intrigued?
I really like Emily Watson. She's one of the most sort of watchable actresses we have. And one of the most underappreciated as well. So I will, yeah.
I say, although, yeah, the
more I think about it, the more I'm like, this feels like Beast.
Yeah, yes.
Jesse Buckley, yeah. Johnny Flynn, those kind of vibes. Like, that film is so good that feels like we're kind of treading familiar ground a little bit.
I see what you mean. Yeah, but at least, you know, this one can have a A24 logo before it, and people can make it a substitute for their personality on social media.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Not the A24ers. You can't do that.
It's fine, because, you know, this one will get listens. Cool, shall we go to the next one? So this is... Cool Jane. So this is Elizabeth Banks, who finds herself in a man's world of medicine. And joins an adventure, if you will. What would you call it?
Where are you going with this?
I don't know. I was trying to say like a movement to...
That is the right word, Simon.
Liberate. Yeah. That's the one. A movement to liberate medicine and healthcare for outside of the male orthodoxy. There we go. Got there. With a really quite interesting cast, actually, some good people in there. So Charlotte, is this piquing your interest?
I think this could be a really important film. Maybe not important in terms of it represents everything, but in terms of getting people talking. I was just looking, the pre-production of this film started in October 2020, and it shows really how the past, particularly American politics, has been on since then.
Yeah.
This film is really precedent. It's almost in that horrible way history can be circular and secular. We're back to this being an issue for so many women in America, or people who can get pregnant in America.
Yes, definitely, yeah.
I don't think this film will be amazing. I can't predict, you know, say why based on the trailer. But I think, you know, you've got a great cast behind it that I think I'm looking forward to watching it.
And say, yeah, it does look good. And honestly, anything that Sigourney Weaver turns up in, I'm just immediately thinking, hang on a minute, I need to watch this.
It's meant to be Susan Sarandon initially.
I know. Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
And Elizabeth Moss in the main role.
Okay, as I say, all of this is, you know, whatever version that ended up being, I would have been fascinated either way, because they're all great. They're all swell. If you're listening, Elizabeth's and Susan and Sigourney, you're all great. Good job. Good job on the good stuff. I don't know where I was going with that. I'm really sorry. I don't know. Alex, Cool Jane, yay or nay?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as Charlotte was saying, like, this story feels more precedent now than it ever has, really. And the true life story that this is based off is just an incredible story of resilience and power and togetherness. Like, at Sundance this year, there was a documentary about this called The Janes.
Oh.
Which was very, very good. And if I don't know if it's had a UK release or not, I'm going to have a look now. But the documentary was really, really, really good. And that felt like kind of enough in terms of, you know, it's being released now when all this is happening in America. And it's telling a story that even though it happened, what, 50 years ago, that it's now an issue again. I think in America it's on HBO Max, so if you're in America and listening to this, I would wholeheartedly recommend going watching it. But sometimes a documentary isn't enough, unfortunately. So I think a film with a cast like this one has the pull for, as Charlotte said, a way of starting a conversation.
Yeah, definitely. And I really hope that it gets a wide reception. Like you said, it's on HBO Max now. And, you know, as long as that platform is allowed to have things like that, not about straight white men, then definitely go see it. And yeah, hopefully when it comes to these shores, we can have an opportunity as well. Okay, moving on. So there's a new sci-fi thing. And look, it's Eddie Marson. It's Vesper. Alex, back to you on this one. Yay or nay?
Again, I couldn't really, like, maybe I wasn't paying attention properly, but yeah.
Nice.
Looks interesting enough.
Charlotte, what about you? Vesper.
On vibes alone, I'm fully in. Yeah, the world building here. There's some images in there that I'm itching to see how they're developed.
Mm.
The characterization, there were these like cloaked people, I don't know if you clocked them, and there's just something really frightening about something that looked decidedly simple, but on top of that you've got quite impressive looking special effects. Like, I don't think this is a massive budget film, but you've got the sense of this whole landscape really intriguingly.
Yeah, for sure. Let's say, yeah, I'm we'll have to see what happens when it comes out and where it comes out. But yeah, intriguing, definitely. Okay, so the penultimate of this list, and my God, it has been a bit of a long one, I'm sorry. I Used to Be Famous. Chance to Be a Fine Thing. But this is, I believe, coming to Netflix?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So this, from what we've seen, is the story of a musician who may or may not be washed up to a degree, played by Ed Skrein, who is trying to get his career and his life back on track, and with a little help from a kid who seems to be quite a talent on the drums. So, Charlotte, from what you've seen of this, I feel like I'm saying that over and over again on this one, what do you think?
My concern with the trailer grew as I watched it. And then I read the plot summary. The teenage character is portrayed as autistic. I don't know enough about the context of the film for why they've made that choice, or the actor, or but it concerns me the stereotypes that already appeared in the trailer with terms of depiction of autism that I'm wary.
The actor himself, I did have a little research, is autistic himself.
Okay. Okay.
That is as far as I got on that.
Okay. Well, before we got to the last one, Alex, how are your thoughts towards I Used to Be Famous?
Yeah, I think it's going to have to toe a very very careful line, and that I think there's potential for it to maybe derail, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Okay, well, last of all, and again, this is an extended look at something we'd already kind of slightly discussed previously. On the count of three, that's the name of the film. I wasn't going to announce something. But from what we've seen more of this, Alex, am I right in thinking you've seen this film?
I have not, no, unfortunately.
Okay, I don't know why I had that feeling.
Yeah, because this film premiered at Sundance last year, like 2021. So it's been, and it's already had a theatrical release in America. Right. I would know because it's an Annapurna film. And yeah, it's taken its merry old time to get around here. I didn't even know, actually. I'd kind of lost all hope that it was going to get any kind of UK release. So.
Okay, well, let's say, for some reason I thought this was... Yeah, but there you go. Cool. Well, Charlotte, from this extended look, has this continued to ferment your interest in this?
Oh yeah, I think this looks really intriguing. So is it August 17th it's coming?
Soon, yeah.
We've got a release date? I'm saying Hulu. Yeah, this looks dark, funny. It looks carefully done as well, over a topic which is obviously hugely serious.
Definitely, yeah.
And again, it should hopefully start some conversations, or hopefully encourage people to maybe reach out.
I really hope so, because yeah, it's an important thing to get more discussion around, for sure.
Because the biggest killer of men under 40 is suicide, isn't it?
It is.
The biggest cause
of death. In this country, definitely, yeah. And in the US, I think, as well. You're absolutely right. So, yeah, gosh. So, yeah, I'm so fascinated and intrigued by this film myself. And yeah, I really hope that it does the subject matter well, tackles it well. Okay, so with that, we conclude the trailers. And as is the way of things, after the trailers, we must have a feature presentation. Now, in this case, we have the reviews. And we will start with the big one. So this is the new feature film from Jordan Peele. Name needs very little introduction, but if you do need some context of who this is, first of all, where have you been? Second of all, Get Out, Us, and on television, the Key and Peele show and the Twilight Zone reboot, among other things. So now we have Nope, and this is the new horror film, I say pointedly. It's about a brother and a sister, Emerald and OJ. They are descendants of, well, who they say is the first stuntman. The first bit of motion picture recorded was 2 seconds of a man riding a horse, and that person was their great. I'm trying to remember how many greats there were.
Add a few greats, she said.
Yeah, add a few greats. and yeah, so as they tried to keep some, as they say, skin in the game, in Hollywood, the Haywoods, with their stunt horse ranch, things start going awry. A cloud stays in one place for a long old time, and their horses are going missing. And may or may not have something to do with Ricky Jupiter Jupe Park, whose big tourist attraction has got a brand new show coming. So, before we get started, we actually have one bit of correspondence, all of one. As always, we put a call out on Twitter at @jumpcast_ for any reviews that we can just, you know, share with you, fine people who don't necessarily get to see those call outs or just don't have Twitter. And this comes from one of our own, Callum Cooper, who says, Nope makes 3 for 3 in terms of great Jordan Peele films. A compelling and suspenseful look at exploitation and our relationship to spectacle. Notably, the lengths we go to for the famed money shot. So, we've heard from, well, correspondent, but how do we feel about it? So, I'm going to go with Alex first. Alex.
Callum's done my job for me. I'm very happy to just leave it at that. That's a very articulate and wonderful point made on the film. So, thank you. No, I'm joking. I mean, at the end of the day, this film is just brilliant. And I think even more so, the more I think about it, the more I just kind of am in awe of how wonderfully clever it is. And we were talking before about how a scientist could experiment on Neil Gaiman's brain. You know, with Jordan Peele's, I just want to get right on in there and just see what's going on, because, yeah, he's just something, just on another level, I think, on another plane of existence. I'm trying to think of ways to explain how brilliant I think this film is. I think everything is incredibly intentional and everything is there for a reason. And I think, contrary to popular belief, every aspect of this film, whether it is there for a longer or a shorter amount of time, is the perfect amount of time for specific things. One thing I will say is I feel like a spoiler special for this would be a very good thing, because it's so plot heavy that you just want to say things and you just want to say, oh, this bit and that bit, and like how that feeds into everything else and just how wonderfully everything complements itself. I think it's genuinely terrifying at times. Yes, I'll just go there now. It is a horror movie.
Yeah.
I think people saying that it isn't a horror movie, or that it goes away from kind of what he's done in the past and it's not as scary, I disagree. I feel like there are some really scary sequences in this film. There's a particular sequence in the barn of the ranch where Daniel Kaluuya's character OJ hears a bump in the night and goes to investigate. And I was clutching the handles of my seat, like, oh my God, this is genuinely terrifying. Like, if I was in that situation, I would piss my pants. Like, I genuinely, that is such a scary moment. There are so many moments like that that I feel draw influences from the horror genre so explicitly that to say that it's not a horror movie, I just feel is stupid. If I'm honest, I also love that it draws so much from sci-fi and the sci-fi genre as well. The score is just chef's kiss. I was getting Close Encounter vibes, and I feel like that kind of nostalgia that I got from that really fed into how wonderful the score was there. Hoyt van Hoytma knows how to shoot a damn film. It just looks absolutely beautiful at all times. Daniel Kaluuya is brilliant as usual, but Kiki Palmer really is the standout in this. She's just brilliant. And Steven Yeun as well, of course. His character is so, so fascinating. And I know that people have said that maybe he was underutilized, but I don't know whether that was for a reason or whether, you know, it's kind of a thing of we're not being spoon fed like his motivations and his entire story and all of that kind of stuff, and the inklings and the snapshots we get of him and his life and the things that he has been through really affect the events of the film and the big things that happen like later on, and like in this kind of the end of the second act and then the third act. And I just feel like you could talk about and write essays about that character and what it represents and all of that kind of stuff just forever and ever. And yeah, I think that's everything. I think it's just, yeah, I love that it's kind of subtle, but also not subtle at the same time. Like everything's there for a reason, but it's also, there's just so much to peel back. Pardon the pun.
I was going to say peel back.
I loved it. And I can't wait to go and watch it again. I'm really, really excited to do so.
Wonderful. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Charlotte, how are your feelings on Nope after Bearing Witness?
Yeah, I think I'd second everything Alex said. One of the great pleasures in life is when you read a really good book and you scour it for details, you see where stuff has been plotted throughout, where you want to sort of like dissect it because you love it so much. And I feel that way about this film. I almost want Jordan Peele to do a director's cut where he explains every reference, everything, pop culture or whatever that inspired certain things to be included.
Yeah.
Because it is, to me, it is a masterpiece. I can't see how people are neutral on this film. I was enwrapped watching it. I couldn't work out where it was going to go. I was scared for the characters the entire time. There was one sequence as well, one which a lot of people are saying is unnecessary, that I'm like, that's the scariest thing I might have ever seen at a cinema. And several times the friend I was with curled into me because she was so scared.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which was, oh, okay, you don't like horror films, good to know. which is funny coming from me. The performances are amazing. I think Daniel Kaluuya has the most expressive eyes in cinema. How we convey so much with an expression and a look is insane. Kiki Palmer's energy is almost hard to describe in this film. It's just amazing. Stephen Yeun, as you said, that character has used the right amount, I think, to second what Alex said, because it aids the other stuff. The guy who played Angel, I thought, was brilliant. It's been a while since I've been at a film where I've been using like my body language, and occasionally I apologise to members of the cinema verbally, like, don't do it, why are you doing that thing, move, or that kind of thing. I was so immersed in the film. And the way it kind of has chapters as well, maybe because that's the way my brain works, I just found really pleasing.
I feel like the chapters thing made it feel all the more intentional as well, I think, as well. Mm. And especially what the reason that the chapters are there, I think.
I'll say, and when you remember what the chapters are and to what they are referring.
Yeah. I just wanted, sorry, Simon, before you... there's a moment, and this moment's in the trailer, so I don't think I'm spoiling anything by doing this, but there's a moment in the film, just to kind of go to like the performances and the chemistry that Daniel Kaluuya and Kiki Palmer have, but there's a moment in the film where they a conversation is being had, and then they kind of turn to each other and do like a series of high fives.
Oh yeah.
And that moment within the context of the film, like, obviously, even though it's absolutely terrifying, it's really unnerving and kind of like this really horrible situation, that moment was just like, it just lit me up. I was just like, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah, no, I can't agree more. I do think it is just incredible. The thing that came out to me, and So I saw this an advanced preview, and it was absolutely packed and in IMAX. And I think if you can see it on an IMAX screen, please I implore you to go and see it on that. If for whatever reason you can't, whether that's monetarily or anything else like that uplift is just too much, go and see it on just the big screen. Just go and see it. It's, you'll not be disappointed. But what really stuck with me was just, I can't remember the last time I watched the film and just found myself thinking, I need to let this percolate. I need to like get on the train, get home, lock the door, go to bed, wake up the next morning and still be thinking about it going, oh yeah, oh, that's actually quite, when you think about that, yeah, oh, that's good. I think maybe the last time that happened for me was Us, I think. Like, it might have actually been his last film. And I think what he does so well is that, you know, anything in a film like this should be deliberate. And, you know, I'm not saying that every film needs to be meticulous and everything else like that, you know. Like, so, you know, life will get in the way of things, you know, budget and everything else. But when you have a director who is so on top of his game and it's so like, everything has to have a meaning, like down to the year on a coin, which may or may not be important kind of thing. Like, all of that is just so clever and just the detail and it's just the love. And when you have someone who's been able to go, okay, yeah, I'll make the, you know, I'll kind of bridge the gap between the mainstream and the more kind of independent meaning and message cinema in Get Out, and then doing something properly kind of social horror again with Us, which I maintain is his best film. I think this is really good, but Us was so special. And I think, yeah, Daniel Kaluuya is phenomenal. I mean, you know, he's got a golden statuette to say, you know, that's a fairly popular opinion. And yeah, Kiki Palmer is just, like you said, Charlotte, her enthusiasm is infectious. That first scene she's in where there's kind of like a health and safety meeting and like you get everything you need to know about her in that 2 minutes. Like, she is great. And I think, yeah, everyone is bringing their A game in this. And even the bits that feel adjacent to the story, in without giving too much away, the flashbacks to Steven Yeun's character's trauma, let's just say. Yeah, like that is just like, you are seeing someone just go, cool, we are using like everything. Like, it's no surprise that this is like, I think I looked up some of this, is the first horror film to use IMAX cameras. It's no surprise that he went like, I want to make something spectacular. I think even the beginning of the film, there's a biblical quote that says, I'll make you a spectacle. And, you know, there's a lot to be said about, and I think Callum mentioned it as well, like, you know, the exploitation involved in getting the spectacle. And, you know, these are people who work with animals. And again, that's something that comes up a lot in this film. And yeah, it is funny that the people who don't get it most vocally and most, and the opinions on that front that are pushed most prominently on things are also the people that feels maybe a little bit pointed towards this film. Mm-hmm. Not naming any names, but because let's be honest, they've got enough airtime everywhere else. But yeah, I think this is just really special. I think, yeah, it's just cements Jordan Peele as this just phenomenal voice in cinema right now. Cool. Okay, so that was Nope. So we should move swiftly on to the new Netflix film, as mentioned by me, not God Awful. I'll elaborate on that a little bit, I'm sure. Day Shift. So this is, Jamie Foxx plays a vampire hunter, there's no other way to put it, living and working in California, trying to make ends meet so that he can keep what is left of a marriage and establish and maintain a relationship with his daughter, with the threat of them moving away from that home if he can't pay the bills, essentially. And he is joined by Dave Franco as part of the Vampire Hunting Union, who is sent out to do field work after a life behind a cushy desk. And occasionally, Snoop Dogg turns up to, well, be Snoop Dogg, essentially. So, Charlotte, what did you think of Day Shift? Have you had the pleasure?
I haven't, no.
Oh, you've not? Okay, well, in that case...
I think you're on your own with this one.
Oh, Alex, you've seen this one.
I have seen
Oh, no, yeah, you saw it. Okay, I didn't. Okay.
Okay, in that case, Alex, I'll come to you instead. What did you think of Day Shift?
So, I'm not sure whether this is a product of films like The Grey Man that have come in recent months, in terms of the fact that, like, expectations for films that come straight to Netflix or as Netflix originals are so down, even below the ground, that I actually really enjoyed this. Like, I watched this with a couple of friends, and I was the person saying, right, I've kind of got to watch this because it's, you know, it's one film that we'll probably talk about or whatever, but I don't really want to because it's probably just going to be rubbish. And I think Jamie Foxx is brilliant, and you know, I don't mind Dave Franco and all that kind of stuff, but I'm not excited to watch this film whatsoever. So call me very surprised when it comes to like the end, and I'm kind of like, okay, that was really trashy, but it was so stupidly fun that I can kind of forgive it for not being the height of cinema. I think kind of on that note, the plot, it's nothing new, it's nothing fresh, like it doesn't really... I suppose the only thing it really offers new in terms of like the vampire genre is the kind of fact that in the narrative of this film, there are vampire hunters that hunt on two separate shifts, the night shift and the day shift, obviously. So, you know, hunting vampires during the day is a different task because, of course, if vampires go into sunlight, they burn up. Yeah. So I think that's really all it kind of offers in terms of that, like in new things. And I feel like it kind of does it a bit interestingly, even though it then introduces vampire sun cream, which is just incredibly stupid way to justify why they're not burning up in the sun. But yeah, I think Jamie Foxx is wonderful. I don't feel like I should ever doubt Jamie Foxx because he really is just brilliant in everything that he does. Dave Franco was great. I feel like he just knows how to play weedy and Duncy really well. And I feel like the stuff that his character goes through is brilliant. But I think the main thing about this film that really kind of attached me to it and the reason I had so much fun is that the action is just wonderful. Like, it's so incredibly choreographed. And there's one specific scene where Jamie Foxx and Dave Franco is having to go with Jamie Foxx as like his mandated kind of has to make sure that he's doing everything by the book. And they go with two other famous vampire hunters in the San Fernando Valley to a house. And the house ends up being like a hive of vampires. So it's just this like 10, 15 minute kind of set piece of them just absolutely ripping shit into vampires, basically. And that whole scene is so well done. There are so many, like, I'm pretty sure during that scene, I just went, oh my God. Oh, what? Oh, okay. Like so many times, like mouth agape, just because of how interestingly well choreographed it was. And then finally, Snoop Dogg in this film is genuinely iconic. Like, Snoop Dogg is generally just cool, isn't he? But I don't know what it was about him in this film, but I was just like, I'm all here for Cowboy Snoop Dogg. Cowboy Vampire Snoop Dogg. I'm not going to lie. Do you know how they're making like a gray man universe and a Red Notice universe? Give me a prequel with Snoop Dogg about the origins of him vampire hunting, or give me a sidequel just with his character, because I would genuinely watch the hell out of it. Like, really.
I say, no, I agree. It's fun. Like, I was not expecting this. When we saw the trailer and we kind of commented on just how tacky it looked, and then when it came up as a Netflix film, like, I think we all collectively went, oh yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, my God. You know what? Someone brought this up. I was talking about it and somebody said three words that immediately just clicked into gear, like what was doing it for me with this film. Men in Black. It's the... You have this whole world, this like hidden like demi-monde, if you want, of like vampires and vampire hunters and all this, that and the other, with its own like mythology and lore, and like there are castes of vampires, like there are different types of vampires, that kind of thing. But then you have the tedious bureaucracy and like the someone sitting at a desk and going, right, okay, here's your bounty for the vampire teeth, less your union dues, less your membership card, that kind of thing. That stuff, I love that. Like, I don't know what it is, but whenever you have a film where there's like this, or even like in any kind of culture, like any kind of media, where you have this fantastical thing, but then you just have the mundane, like, oh yeah, well, you know, it's going to take 5 to 6 working weeks for this to come through and all that kind of thing. Like, it just feels so bedded in. It feels so organic. And that's what I loved about this. Like, this could have been like your Ryan Reynolds quip marathon thing, but it really wasn't. Like, it felt cohesive and coherent, and everything made sense in the laws of the storytelling, and it plays to convention and then some. Like, you know, if you like that, then it has that. If you want something different, you're not going to get that from Day Shift. But what it does so well is that it plays with that formula and that convention to a point where, like, it's not inverting anything, but it's the stuff it does around it. Like, Alex, the perfect example is the stuff with in the house. Like, every bit of that was choreographed so well. Like, everything was clear. Like, you could tell the geography of the house, who was fighting who, what was, you know, what room was the danger room kind of thing. And I just thought, you know what? There are so many people who don't get the basics right when doing films that are infinitely more complex or much less devoted to generic convention, that I just found myself going, you know what? This is so... It's like if someone can make a really good spaghetti bolognese, like that is going to be so much more delicious and enjoyable than someone who absolutely fluffs like a filet mignon, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
very true.
Like, a really, really good burger is infinitely better than an average or poor, like, yeah, like Wellington or whatever. Like, it's just...
I'd rather go to the greasy takeaway around the corner for a calzone that's dripping in grease.
Yeah, exactly. Rather than the posh pizza place, which chips. Is... tasteless.
Chicken,
yeah, exactly.
Chips. Exactly. Yeah.
That's like,
that is this film. Completely.
Yeah. Like, it's not gonna give you much in the way of nutrition. Well, it might give you some actually, because like I said, the technical bits are really good. And yeah, I agree, Jamie Foxx is excellent in this. Like, he does that downtrodden, like, yeah, okay, oh, what do you mean I can't get union money or this kind of thing? Like, oh, okay, I've got to go down the back streets because I got kicked out of this one organization, and oh yeah, they're an absolute rip-off merchant. Oh, you have to laugh. Like, that kind of thing. I love that. That's brilliant. Like, I'm a sucker for that anyway. And then when it's done well, like, yeah, hats off to you. And yeah, really enjoyed it. What can I say?
We enjoyed a Netflix movie. Oh my gosh.
There we go. Well,
never again.
Never again. There we are. Once and never again. Okay, so... we're going to come next to Where is Anne Frank? I've not seen this myself. Alex, have you seen this?
No, I believe this is a Charlotte joint.
This
Charlotte
is me.
Exclusive. In that case, Charlotte, you have the floor for Where is Anne Frank?
Yeah, I was just... here we go. So I've been going through quite bad writer's block lately. Nearly 2 months, I'd reckon. And I'm trying to train myself with Letterboxd to get back into the habit. So this is my Letterboxd review for Where is Anne Frank, which doesn't have a question mark in the title. Some beautiful animation is wasted on a convoluted story that never fully gets to grips with the exceptionally important topics it is trying to cover. The premise is an intriguing one. Anne Frank's diary, Kitty, comes to life a year from now. She awakens in the Anne Frank Museum and is desperate to find her beloved friend, having no idea what has occurred in the past 80-odd years. The film's message is about how the issues Anne and her family faced are as prevalent now as they were then. But the storytelling choices prevent these from landing as powerfully as they should. The film's title is a question, and the film itself raises another. Who exactly is this for?
Wow. That was nicely done. And so it's a shame to hear. I say, I'm fascinated by the idea of the diary coming to life and trying to find her. It's an interesting, interesting concept.
Yeah, and I don't
would have tried to find Justin Bieber first, but
he does. No, there is a cameo.
Oh,
yeah.
No way.
Okay, I didn't even think that.
Briefly in the museum.
Gosh.
One of the standouts to me, it's like a really simple one, but I guess all these things are. I've not been to the Anne Frank Museum. I've not considered going. I've not looked at pictures. On the wall in this animation in her bedroom, there are pictures of like Hollywood stars that she admires. And for me, it was this weird, simple reminder of that she was not only a human, because I think, and the film does make the point of the fact her name, this area in Amsterdam, is Anne Frank Road, Anne Frank Castle, Anne Frank Hospital. Mm. That she was a human, like an actual normal person, but also how young she was. How relatable, that act of putting these people you really admire on your wall because you fancy them or you love their performance. So that image I thought was lovely. It's an odd film. It distracts away from what it's trying to say, I think.
That's a shame. Well, but thank you, Charlotte. But yeah. Okay. Well, that leaves us one last review. I think... Am I the only one who's seen this?
Yes, correct.
Yes.
Okay, so I'll be brief then. To be honest, it's not going to be a long review either way. So, Lal Singh Chadha. So this is the Indian remake of Forrest Gump. It's instead of Tom Hanks, you have Aamir Khan, who is just, you know, a very esteemed, respectable and bankable actor in so many ways. And has proven that over decades of work. So this is an almost word-for-word adaptation of Forrest Gump. Obviously, the locations and the references have been changed, so it's not teaching Elvis Presley to dance, a white kid instead of him, you know, being who he was. But instead, Lal teaches Shah Rukh Khan to dance and become a massive Bollywood sensation, you know, that kind of thing. Or, you know, instead of Vietnam, he enlists in the Indian Army and goes to fight insurgents in the mountains and that kind of thing. It is a film which is over 2.5 hours long, including an intermission. The original Forrest Gump, I'm just going to have a quick look here, is... 2 hours 22. So it's 10 minutes longer or 20 minutes longer, including an intermission, than the original. It's about as offensive as the original, I'd say. So there's been much said about more qualified people than I about how Forrest Gump portrays disability, portrays race, and so many other things throughout. And while obviously there are going to be some things which won't be included in a story that's translated from the 50s onwards of the south of the USA to the 1980s, 1990s in India, and yet there still pervades this grossly ableist portrayal going on. It has the leg brace thing, as did the original. There's also something about Aamir Khan's portrayal of Lal Singh Chadha which is very unsettling. There's a lot of kind of, I don't even know how to describe it, but there, it's something which felt offensive when I was watching it. There's a lot of mugging and a lot of gurning and a lot of because Forrest Gump and Last Seen in Shadow are both men with learning disabilities, and it does lean into this, the innocence of these people, and you know, the childlike wonder, I think, is something that's come up in interviews all over the place, which just gives me the creeps. And it makes Tom Hanks's performance as Forrest Gump seem nuanced. And that's all I have to say about that, to quote both films. Okay, so on a more cheerful note. So that was the review section, and to wind things down, Alex, you have a game for us.
I do. Not sure how this is going to go. Again, no kind of originality in this. It has been it's a stolen format. I do. I mean, you know, is anything ever original these days? So, I'm going to come to each of you, one after the other, okay. And I am going to read members of a cast from a film, from a kind of lower build to top build on IMDb.
Oh, that's right. Nice.
Interesting.
And you, so it will start at lower and it will then eventually get to the top build cast member of that film's cast. You get to guess after every name, and the lower build you guess, the more points you get.
Interesting.
So it'll be like a 3, 2, or 1 point. So say if you get it top build, if you only get it at the top build, you'll get 1 point. If you get it lower down, you'll get more points. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm.
Okay. So, Simon, I'm going to come to you first.
Okay.
Lakeith Stanfield.
Right.
Do you want to? You can either guess or you can you can skip it onto the next one. It's up to you.
I want to go to the next one, please.
Okay. Toni Collette.
Lakeith Stanfield, Toni Collette. I'm going to need another one, please.
Don Johnson.
Oh, Knives Out.
Correct. Hey. Yes, very good. It would have gone further up and you would have had Michael Shannon, Jamie Lee Curtis, Ana de Armas, Chris Evans, and then top build was Daniel Craig.
Of course.
Cool. Right. You get 2 points for that.
Hooray.
If you would both like to keep track of your points.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Charlotte.
Yeah.
It's now over to you.
How many actors are there? So what's the...
You go...
It's five.
I'm doing eight from eight down.
Oh, right. Okay.
Okay. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Willem Dafoe.
So if I guess...
You don't lose anything.
Spider-Man.
Incorrect. Michael Gambon.
Oh, shoot. No.
No. Eric Chase Anderson.
The Northman?
Incorrect. Wallace Wolodarski.
That's a real person.
That's a real person.
Willem Dafoe. No, still no.
No. Bill Murray.
Oh, Life Aquatic.
Incorrect. Jason Schwartzman.
Train, Darjeeling Limited.
Incorrect. Meryl Streep.
Should have made it more obvious. No, pass.
George Clooney.
No, my brain's gone.
No. Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Didn't know we're including animation.
I was just going for like films blanket.
When you got to like Bill Murray and Jason Schwartzman, it did feel like for a dollar name a Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah, that's where I was going. I was like, oh, you were in a Wes Anderson film.
You did go through the Wes Anderson films.
Yeah. It's like, what's Meryl Streep and a Wes Anderson?
Very cheeky.
Okay, very sorry on that one, Charlotte. Okay. Simon.
Yeah.
Stella Gonet.
How dare you. Pass. Next, please.
Sean Harris.
Sean Harris. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
Incorrect. Jack Farthing.
Not a clue.
Freddie Spry.
Are these real people?
Yeah.
Okay, Macbeth.
Incorrect. Jack Nealon.
Am I just like... Have I been cryogenically
it's
frozen?
It's not meant to be incredibly
They're all
obvious.
My favourite actors. What are you on about?
Next, please.
Sally Hawkins.
Oh, that's a person I know. Oh, but I can't think of a film. Happy-go-lucky? I don't know.
Timothy Spall.
Oh, God. Okay. No.
Kristen Stewart.
Kristen, what?
Oh, I got it.
It's not like the what do they call them?
You're going to kick yourself. That's all I'm going to say.
Incorrect, Simon. Charlotte, for a point, would you like to try and steal it?
Spencer.
Oh, correct. Of course it is. Oh, correct. Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. 100% correct.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Charlotte, back to you. Eric Idle.
Carry on.
No, that was the other one.
Rupert Everett.
Shrek 2.
Oh, incorrect.
Oh, but I'm on the right line.
John Cleese.
Shrek the Third.
Correct! Yes! I think, yeah, you get 2 points for that.
Thank you.
Very well done. Right, okay, we'll do one more each and we'll see, because it still can go either way.
Okay.
Right. Let's see here now. Simon.
Yep.
Peter Kraus.
Is this like the German version of the footballer? Is it the Peter Kraus podcast?
No.
Okay, go on to the next one.
Blair Slater.
No, sorry.
Brian DeLate, when Brian DeLate early
comes in.
For fuck's sake.
Next, please.
Holland Taylor.
No. I think actually for the Netherlands Taylor.
Natasha McElhone.
That's a name?
That is a name, yeah.
Oh, God. Natasha McElhone. No.
Noah Emmerich.
That's another name.
That is another name.
Why do I suck at this? No, pass.
Laura Linney.
They were both in something. They were both in something.
They were.
Go on.
For 1 point, Jim Carrey.
Oh, The Truman Show.
Correct, yes.
Thank you.
Yes, there you are. Right, so you're both on free, so Charlotte, this is for the win.
Okay.
Oh, this is brutal.
What should we go with here? I'm trying to think of one that might not... Right, okay, let's do this. Francis X. McCarthy.
Pass.
Colette Wolfe.
Pass.
David Oyelowo.
Interesting. What was that film called? Small Island, was that what it was called? No, it wouldn't be that low in the bill, no.
Nope.
Carry on.
Timothy Chalamet?
Films? Not French Dispatch.
Incorrect. John Lithgow.
What did they do together? I'm going to look this up because...
Mackenzie Foy.
That's a child actor, I think.
Oh! Good lord. Okay, yeah.
Would you like the next one?
Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey.
It's not Mud.
Incorrect. Final name, Ellen Burstyn.
Ellen Burstyn's name was higher.
She is the top billed member of this cast, yes.
Wow. That's
according to IMDb, yeah.
Hang on a minute.
There are two other big names in this film that are like, they're in the depths. Actually, three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey films. David Lewa. That one in the car. No, he would be lower on that. Gringo, I think. No, he's not in that. No, pass. No.
It was Interstellar.
Do you feel good about that?
I do. Yeah, the interesting thing is about that cast on IMDb is that Anne Hathaway, Jessica Chastain, and Matt Damon are all really low build.
Well, and Michael Caine. And
it's mental.
Yeah,
right?
I suppose so.
Is that to do with I'll tell you what. They appear?
Because you're drawing.
Okay.
Very quickly, I'm going to do one more, and it'll just be the first to shout it out.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay? Very quickly. Callie Hernandez, Cinda Adams, Tom Shelton, Terry Walters, Amy Conn, Emma Stone, Ryan Gosling.
La La Land.
There it is.
Oh.
Simon is our winner.
Let's see. That's a phrase that's not been mentioned ever before in the English language.
Maybe we'll soon be famous.
And then I used to be famous after that. all right. Well, thank you, Alex. That was a really fun game.
Thank you very
much. Enjoyed it for the most part.
I do enjoy our little parlor games. They're quite fun. But yeah, that does mean that that's the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with more of the same and reviews of the new Fisherman's Friends film, probably the new Orphan film, if any of us can be bothered, and whatever else comes up. But until then, it's a goodbye from me and the same from Alex, I'm sure.
Yes, goodbye.
And from Charlotte.
Stay sexy.
Wonderful. We'll see you next week. But until then, take care of yourselves and we'll see you for more Dumpcast soon.